Hey everyone, and welcome back to the TRX Procast Road to Athens series. This is episode 2, and I'm your host, Nathan Di Rosario. Today, we have a special treat lined up for you. Joining us is Miguel Vargas, TRX Training and Development Manager, who will be diving into the intricacies of crafting effective group workouts, exploring online training innovations, and providing an exclusive preview of the upcoming TRX Training Summit in Athens. First and foremost, a big thank you to our sponsors of this series, Ultralife, who boast some of the best gym facilities in all of Greece. Now, speaking of Athens, make sure you mark your calendars because the biggest TRX Training Summit ever will be in Athens, Greece on February 24th, 25th in partnership with Ultralife Gyms. If you haven't already booked your tickets, please do. This is a one-time opportunity to have an experience of a lifetime. So without further ado, let's jump into this exciting episode of The Road to Athens.
Hey, what's up, TRX gang? My name is Miguel Vargas. I'm the head of education and training for TRX. I have been blessed to be a part of the TRX family since 2010. I started off in the training center in San Francisco, our little 1,000 square foot studio, and I've not stopped running with the brand since. I've been fortunate enough to teach classes, GM of the studio, you name it. There's probably not a role I haven't had at TRX. I've helped with the marketing. I've helped some of the sales guys. I've swept the floors. I've scrubbed the toilets. I've pulled people off the streets to come in to take classes. But more importantly, the last eight years or so, I've been a part of the education and training team. And what that means is I've been blessed in the opportunity to teach education courses to coaches around the world, lately helping to develop some of that content. And really in the last couple of years, part of the education and training team where I've been fortunate enough to meet some really great up and coming coaches locally and internationally to help them on their TRX instructor journey. It's been a wild ride and looking forward to everything else that's ahead of me right now. And really excited to be here today.
For TRX, has fitness and training always been part of your life, your daily life before starting TRX? Did you have a journey playing sports or anything like that?
I've always been an athlete. When I was a kid, I always had a ball in my hand, whether it was a baseball, a football, a basketball, or a kickball. And I got into high school and due to an injury, I had an injury and surgery when I was about 12 or 13 years old, that it restricted me from contact sports, all of my favorite ball sports, football, baseball, basketball. And so I get into high school and I say, I got to do something. And so the doctor said, well, swimming's a low impact sport. You can get into that. And funny enough, the only swimming I'd ever done was playing at the beach. But the competitiveness in me and the person who wanted to do some sport went out there, and I tried the swim team. And it was really funny. My younger brother, who was about 6 years younger than me, had just broken a 8-and-under swimming record. All of his swim buddies thought, hey, that's Abraham's big brother. He could definitely be a good swimmer. I was not. I had to work really hard to be decent. And I got through high school swimming, and I actually swam in college and had a really good career doing that. And after college, I wouldn't call myself a competitive athlete, but wanted to keep busy, stayed in the pool, stayed in the gym. And as time went on through adulthood and jobs and things like that, I found myself in the gym, becoming a gym rat, and played around or dabbled a little bit in the bodybuilding world, and had a good little stint in that. I did a couple shows. I won a couple shows. And then after that, found TRX. And the story behind that is really, really funny. I'll give you the quick version of that. I was modeling a little bit in San Francisco, and I'd gotten a request for a TRX photo shoot. I'd never heard of TRX before. I show up, there's this rig and these straps and all of these fit looking people. Okay, these are my people. They're fit. Yeah. And he wasn't just trying on clothes and taking some photos. Well, let me tell you what. The next day, probably the next 2 days, I could not move. I was just sore, just beat up, and this training holding these, imagine holding a chest press and a low row and a sprinter star and a crunch and all of these just so they can get the right shot and never having used these straps before. And that's where TRX was embedded in my brain. And it took me a year before I learned more about the company and saw the opening and was able to move forward and fortunate enough to get the role that was offered. But yeah, it was ironic how I was introduced to TRX a year before I actually started with the company. And the funny story behind that is when I came in for the interview on my first day, there was a big desk. You walk in to the office, the secretary at the front desk, and I was on the poster behind her doing a chest press. Hey, that's me. I think I deserve this job because that's me. I was on the wall.
We were already the face of TRX.
Yeah, literally the face of TRX at the time before I even started.
Was you doing fitness modeling before that then? What modeling was it? I'm just interested.
Oh, this, I was afraid to open up that box right there. San Francisco, there's not a lot of fitness modeling. You really have to be tall and skinny, and I was tall and buff. I didn't work that much as a model. I got a few gigs here and there. When I was fortunate enough to get the job with TRX, I was really excited about that. And the irony is that the 2 or 3 years that I spent as a model was fun. I met some really cool people. I did some really cool events and things like that. But the highlight of my modeling career in the fitness industry actually came with TRX, being able to be featured in Men's Fitness and a couple of other publications and things like that. But if you want to be a model in San Francisco, you got to be tall, you got to be skinny, and blow when the breeze blows with you.
Well, you seem to have enjoyed it anyways. I think for 2 or 3 years being a model, and that's a good stint actually, because I can imagine it being quite a tough industry to get into and then to maintain a livelihood for that, I would say.
Definitely a second job. It was definitely a second job in addition to the main gig that.
The series of podcasts is The Road to Athens, as we're getting closer and closer to the biggest TRX summit ever. We're going to discuss that. But I also wanted to touch base on you from a group workout point of view and an online training innovations, because as you mentioned, as well as engaging with students and trainers from all over the world face to face, you have a lot of input into the programming that we create and some of the online services that we've done since COVID. How does the design of a group fitness program differ from an individualized program, considering the varied fitness levels within a group based on your experiences?
Wow. Well, I mean, that's a great question, right? When you think about how you program for something in person, right? You've got to put a whole bunch of factors together. Who's showing up? How much time do you have? What's the goal of the class? What's the equipment you have available? And then you start to piece some things together. And then as you get more experience and more time with the people that are showing up to your classes, you kind of get to dial in or peel back a little bit more, right? And over the years, we've had a lot of fun and experience putting those different programs together, especially at the TRX Training Center. And then you take a minute and you look at, oh man, now we've got to go virtually. How do we take all of those same specs, right? Who's showing up to the class? What equipment do they have? Now you have to think about what space they have. Then you have to think about what experience they have. And then you're maybe thinking about their tools, right? Their audio, their visual. Are they going to be able to see you? Are they going to be able to hear you? And to some of these coaches, you're probably not going to like the way I program and how I roll that out. I am a do simple better, right? TRX has seven foundational movements, and we talk about that in every situation: push, pull, plank, lunge, hinge, rotate. And when we're doing that, I want to keep it as simple as I can, because if we focus on the intention of the movement, the intensity gauges itself, right? And now, if, for example, if we're trying to teach this group workout and there's 100 people virtually, but they can barely hear you because of their situation or see you because you're this small square and you're trying to show them how to do a single arm, single leg chest press on the suspension trainer at a really challenging angle, they're not really sure what's going on. But if you can clearly naps Mr. the exercises and they can hear what you want them to do, and that coaching right there is specific enough that's going to get them set up for success right out the gate. Now we can talk about duration, how long they're going. We can talk about tempo, how fast or slow they're doing it. We can talk about isometrics and things like that. And that changes the game. Now, over time, as you're programming these classes and maybe you have the same people showing up, now you start to see how they're responding to your coaching. You can start to progressively, slowly progress them with some additional challenging moves. But at the beginning, when I start things off and when we start things off, when we start to think about these big opportunities, you got to think about language barrier. When you think about virtual, you've got people that are coming in from all over the world now. They're not just the people that are in your neighborhood that are coming to your local studio. There's a lot of different factors that come into it, but if you look at anything I program, there's going to be a chest press, there's going to be a row, there's going to be a plank, there's going to be some lunges, some squats, a little bit of rotation, maybe resisting rotation. And from there, we start to add the experience of it all. And that's how it comes to life. You know, you could put five exercises on a piece of paper for me, and you could put five exercises on a piece of paper for someone else, and you're going to get two different delivered workouts from those coaches.
Yeah.
And it comes with the experience. It comes with the passion that you're delivering that experience. And but yeah, there's a lot of different metrics that come into play when we start to think about in person, virtually, and then the delivery of it all.
And do you think there's a difference between, say, a group class, a traditional group class with 15, 20 people, and then a small group training class where you've got other pieces of equipment? Is the structure still the same, or are there nuances, differences that you would apply if you were delivering a traditional TRX class with 15 to 20 people to a small group training class with 6 to 8 people? Is it down to because you have more time with people in a smaller group that you can, I suppose, be a bit more hyper-personalized than with a bigger group of 15 to 20 people?
Well, that's another great question, right? First off, I like to think that I bring the same energy for 6 or 600 people, right? You're going to get that same exciting coach. And while it's going to be a lot harder to have a personal interaction with 600 people, in the question that you're saying from 6 to 15, I don't think the programming changes much, right?
Yeah.
But what does change is the opportunity to use different tools. Then the programming is going to change a little bit, right? If I have 4 pieces of equipment, if I have a Y bell, if I have a slam ball, if I have a battle rope, and if I have a power bag, that might work in a group of 6, but I don't know if 15 people are going to be able to have that unless we break them up into stations. And now, again, do I want everyone to have their own piece of equipment and be working at the same time? Do I want to break people up into groups and then it's station-based? They're going from one station to the next, that they do get to use all the equipment that's in there. And so if that's the case, yeah, I could make those 15 people feel just as personal as the 6 because I get to see them at each station and get real personal with each and every one of them.
Yeah.
And then if I've got the 6 people, they've all got their own piece of equipment. Everyone's working at the same time on the same tool. Then we all get the same coaching and things like that. It's just, for me, it really depends on how much equipment I have and how we need to break the room up to feel successful.
You talked about whether it's 6 people or 600 people, you would always bring the same level of energy. However, it might be a little bit controversial, is there a sweet spot for you in terms of the number of people in one room where you could feel, I'm going to own all of these people in terms of the motivation, the energy, or are you happy to just deliver programs no matter whether it's a small group or a big group?
Nathan, I freaking love coaching. And I'll give you a great example. There was a teaching in the TRX Training Center in San Francisco. My Friday 6 a.m. class and 7 a.m. classes were always waitlisted by Tuesday. But Tuesday, they were already waitlisted.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, the evening classes, the 7 p.m. classes usually didn't, a Thursday 7 p.m. class didn't really do well because people want to go out and they want to get after it.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, I'd come in and I'd sub a 7 p.m. class. Every once in a while, there'd only be one person in class. And they'd be like, oh, I could leave if you don't want to be here. Dude, you are about to get a personal one-on-one session. This is a really expensive one-on-one session. You're about to get at a really good price. And they're like, shh, right? Because the excitement for them is I get to work with Miguel one-on-one. And I'm not saying this from an ego standpoint. It for me, I'm personally coming into this. This is my opportunity to change this person's whole perspective of suspension training, the TRX Training Center. And then my goal is for them to go and tell two people to come back to the 7 p.m. class because, dude, Miguel was there. I got personal attention. I got a great workout. And if you come, there's probably not going to be a lot of people. And you got to keep coming before other people figure this out that it's a small class. When you say, what's my sweet spot is just being allowed to show up and teach. If it's one, if it's 100, you're going to get that same grateful, excited coach because I never thought this is what I would be doing for a profession. And if you'd say, I'm going to pay you to show up and teach people how to move better, how to feel better, and how to just enjoy themselves in a group, I would have laughed it. And so,
perfect. You talked about motivation and bringing the energy. Do you have any specific strategies yourself when you're teaching a group that you will always use, whether it's you get people fired up right at the beginning, you do the TRX all in at the end? What strategies do you use yourself to keep people engaged and motivated?
It's evolved over the years. Like I said, I was an athlete and I played football, I played basketball, I swam, and I had some really great coaches and I had some really not great coaches. And from the tougher coaches, I learned what I didn't want in a session. And from the good coaches, I learned what got me through a session, right? And when I think of how I show up to a class, you've got to trust me. If you don't know who I am, I've got to get your trust right out the gate. And it's not going to be by being the loud person. It's just going to be my authentic self. I always try to show up in the beginning of a workout as authentic as I can. I try to meet as many people as I can before, kind of set up a few of the expectations. And then as we start to get moving, it's a first date. When you're on a first date with someone, you don't know them that well. And so you're trying the small talk. I've got a couple one-liners that I test and I'm looking to make as much eye contact as I can as we get through the warm-up and see who are my go-tos and who's in it and who's not making eye contact. I think that's another big one for me, who the people who aren't really bought into it, who do I have to work a little bit harder to get their attention and to keep them engaged through this workout? It's not a real big one in the beginning. It's this build up. And after we get through the warm up and we've explained the first round or so, now people are moving. They're starting to get a little bit more comfortable with it. That's when I start to bring a little bit more energy, bring a little bit more, we think about our coaching personas, the coach persona where I might do a little bit more with you to try to, when we think of the coaching persona, you want to do everything you can to show the coach that you're all in. But if the coach is in there with you working just as hard, now your motivation rises, right? And if you're that athlete, you see that. So that's where I'll go. And then we get into the second or the middle part of it where people maybe are starting to get a little bit tired. They need that little cheerleader or that big energy. That's where the big energy comes in. That's where the jokes get a little bit funnier. I like to think of round three of four. That's the, we're here to do some work and we are going to get after it. So you get a little bit of a sensei, you get a little bit more seriousness. And then that fourth round, we know the home stretch is 100 meters away. Let's just drop the hammer. Let's get after it. And that's where the music's loud. That's where the exercise selection, the degree of difficulty comes down so that the intensity can come a little bit higher. We're worried a little bit less about them injured because they know what they're doing. They can just go for it, right?
Yeah.
If you finish on that, I'm sweaty. You want every person in that room to feel like they've accomplished something. And that's really hard if you've got someone who's never used suspension training before, and if you have someone who has been coming for years and years. If you leave them all with that same, I checked that box, I did the best that I could, that fourth round, it's all high fives and headbutts at the end, and then we wrap it up and we call it a day. There's a little bit of a system that I like to bring to it when I'm coaching. And everyone might be a little bit different, but like I said, it's a first date, especially at a summit or internationally, something like that. They may know who I am, but they don't know what they're getting themselves into. And so until we get that trust factor out of the way in the first couple minutes, then we get rocking and rolling with the energy and the rest of it.
Perfect. You touched base on a little bit in terms of what you do on a warm up. Now, warm up and cool downs in particular are getting more and more, let's say, popular, especially with the recovery tools that are out now. Both of us have used Hyperice quite well as an example. Is there any particular warm up and cool downs that you like to do now that and have they evolved over time as more equipment's coming out, more routines are coming out, or do you have a standard warm up cool down that you would do pretty much regardless, and it ticks all those boxes?
For any of my TRX team camps listeners on here, I'm not gonna lie, I love a TRX squat row. I think that it's everything that I love, a world's greatest stretch or a runner stretch, right? Those are two of my easy go. When you're thinking of a group exercise class, we don't have time to foam roll. We don't have time for all that extra stuff, but is it important? Absolutely. And you've got to treat that as part of the conversation of what are all the things that I can use to satisfy my recovery or preparation, right? It's, those things aren't just for before, it's for after as well. And I think it's great to have that stuff available. As we're getting ready for the class, I might say, hey guys, why don't you grab that hyperbolt and get after your quads a little bit? We're going to do some more jumping today. But some of that stuff might be intimidating to people. Right. They see that and they're like, oh no, that stuff hurts. Right. And I think forcing people to incorporate it into their program is tricky. Ironically, with suspension training, you can't force suspension training on someone because they'll look at you, what am I going to do with those things? Right. It's not until they actually get their hands on it and see the value of, oh, this is harder than I thought. And I appreciate that challenge. To answer your question, in a group setting, you've got to keep the warm-up simple. The warm-up's got to be now on the size of the group, that's a different story. If I'm doing a group of four people, I've got four hypervolts. Hey, let's spend 5 minutes going through some tissue prep, right? And that's fun, right? Or if I got four foam rollers, hey, let's get into something really quickly. But chances are it's people just want to get after it. Right, people coming to a group exercise class that they want to get after it. Now, if you're training in a small group where it's a maybe a husband and a spouse, or two friends are showing up for a partner workout, then that's more of a personal training session where they're going to want a lot more of that personal attention because those are more learning opportunities for them. Hey, what's this tool for? Now you get some more time to explain it throughout the session. Where in a group exercise, the last thing you want is for someone to be standing with their hands on their hips. What's this for? I should be sweating by now. The entitlement of group exercises changed, and you just got to keep up with it. Now we get to the cool down, same thing. And I remember the days where I'd be lucky if 20% of the class didn't leave as soon as the last exercise was done, because oh, I gotta go. I'll stretch when I'm home. You should knock some of this stuff out now, bring some of this energy down a bit. But when it comes to those cool downs after, you want to get your heart rate down, you want to get your body back to baseline, right? You don't want to leave at this high state, but some people like that big energy when they leave a workout.
Is there, do you think there's a risk? Because again, during my time when I was group training, I'd get the same because I worked in a city gym and people would leave like straight after the workout, especially when it was a high intensity workout. Do you think there's a risk to people if they don't cool down properly? Because in my head, people, they would leave and they'll do stretching when they get home. They're not. They're going to sit down and watch Netflix. Do you think, especially with the education that's coming in on recovery now, do you think it's more and more important to cool down? Or it's always been important, but people just didn't realize how important it was?
I I'm sure there's a lot of research and that can give you the details on risk reward of cooling down and coming back to baseline. But just, I mean, just think if you're at a 10, right? And you leave this class and you go into your car at a 10, right? And you're driving on, and I'm back into the studio. You are, right? Like we're in the studio and now you leave at this 10, right? What are you doing? Right? Do you need that same energy to go back into the office or to, and I mean, I can't really speak to the risk of it, right? But I know that there's research on it and it says bringing your heart rate back down to baseline, all that tension in the muscles, you want to break some of that up a little bit to wrap it up. And yeah, I mean, that personally, I see and appreciate the value after some of my trainings where if I don't do something, I notice the difference. If I come off a hard training session and I come to my desk and I sit down for the next hour, it's pretty hard for me to get out of my chair after because everything's just knotted up. And I can't imagine how folks are feeling if they're doing the same thing.
No, for sure, mate. And then in terms of, you've mentioned you always offer the seven foundational movements within your programming from a group perspective. But do you also look at the balance of cardiovascular strength, flexibility components to create, a well-rounded workout? Or do you just focus on, right, well, this workout, we're going to focus on strength. And then the other group session is going to be more cardio-based. How do you work on those balances?
I when it comes to a group exercise class, people want to come and get their heart rate up, right? The majority of people just believe the more I sweat, the harder I work, right? There's some people that don't want to lift heavy because they don't want to get big, right? Then there's that fear of strength, right? And they look at me, I'm 6'1", 220, right? They're like, I don't want to look like you. Don't worry. You're not going to look like me at the end of this class.
I know. I keep saying that me and you look alike and people just don't understand that, which, yeah, we're not the same, guys. So as much as we look similar, we're not.
But I think something that's really, when I program, I try to get it all in there because I don't know if I'm going to see you 3 days a week or if I'm going to see you one day a week, right?
Yeah.
And if this is the only time that you're going to see me, I want to make sure that this is a well-rounded program. And something as simple as using the tools, I programmed a workout where we had a Y bell and there was a Y bell halo. From the halo, we went into an atomic push-up. From the atomic push-up, we went into a TRX hip press, right? Now we've got some mobility. We've got some strength. We've got some more strength and mobility as we get into that hip press. And then we got up and then we did some squat presses with the Y bell again. As we're jumping and we're pushing the Y bell out, now we've got mobility, we've got strength, we've got conditioning all in one set, right?
Yeah.
To them, they don't realize when we come back to the Y bell halo that we're just trying to bring their heart rate back down, but we're also still focusing on that mobility in the shoulder, right? Mm-hmm. We've mobilized the shoulders to get them ready for the push-up. Then we put you on your back for the hamstring curl to give you another break before I get after that cardiovascular hit with the squat jumps, right? Again, to them, they just see four exercises. To me, how do I give you what we call a little grind, a little ballistic, and we go back and forth between those without taking you too high on the energy scale that, I mean, we could very well do atomic push-ups right into squat jumps, right back into atomic push-ups. And now your arms are blasted, your heart rate's through the roof, and set three of the atomic push-ups, you can barely do three of them because you can't move your arms anymore, right? But
yeah,
I think of it like that. Every round may not have that full component of it all, but I'm going to try my best to make sure that it's, the way I like to say it is I like each round to tell a story. And in that story, there's a high, which is probably the cardiovascular or the heart high intensity part of it. There's the mid, which is the strength. And then there's the low, which is that mobility section of it. And some rounds might be a little bit more high. Some rounds might be a little bit more mids, and some might be a little bit more mobilized. But you're never going to leave where, I'd like to think you're not going to leave one of my workouts feeling we did too much of something and not enough of something else.
Yeah.
But you're also not going to leave talking about the programming either. Nobody leaves, "Oh man, I really loved how we mobilized everything in that workout,"
True.
right? They want to have a good time. And it's my job and our job as coaches and programmers to make sure that we are telling that story in a way that they're not worried about the program. They're just worried about the intensity that they get to put in, the intention and intensity that they put into each set, that when they come to the end of it, we can say, "Hey, you did a really good job here, and you're going to feel this, this, and this, and you should be really proud about that."
Perfect, Miguel. Thank you for that. You touched on wire bells in specifically, but equipment selection as a whole, when it comes to group fitness program, is that how you look at, right, I'm going to integrate the wire bell or a sandbag or a sand disc or battle rope, depending on what you want to gain from it? There's some sessions that I've been on in the past where I feel like equipment's just there because it's there. There's no really specific reason other than adding variety to it, which is important. How do you look at equipment and the role that it plays in terms of selection when it comes to your group programming?
You know what? That's a great question, because for me, I like a few limited amount of tools, right?
Yeah.
I'm simple. I like dumbbells, I like kettlebells, I like wide bells. I enjoy a sandbag. I love the slam balls, right? Selfishly, because those are easy to coach. Mostly easy to coach, right?
Yeah.
You start to get into some things where the coaching gets the explanation takes longer than the set. That's more of a personal training situation, right? But depending on where you are, right? If you're in a club and they've got all these different tools, the people come in and they want to play with the tools. And there's a little bit of give and take as a coach, right? If you want people to, if they're asking for it, you got to figure out how to get it into the programming, right? You have to
Yeah.
see the value in the product and how it applies to their goals in your programming style. And something like a battle rope, right? There's probably not enough battle ropes for everyone to use. So how do I figure out how to make this useful, right?
Yeah.
Something like a sand disc, right? Those are tricky, right? You need to coach the crap out of that, so that somebody's doing it well in a group setting. How do I put this in a space that's optimal for the success? And it's also unilateral training. And so, or sorry, bilateral training. When you're doing that, we've got to be individualized with that coaching. We can't just say, "All right, everyone stand on the sand disc. You're going to do sliders here." And meanwhile, they're looking at the next person trying to figure out how to do that. And that's not good coaching, right?
No.
And so for me, we had a lot of tools at the TRX Training Center when we were there. We had battle ropes, we had boxes, we had power bags, we had kettlebells and things like this. And when you have a class of 20 or 30 people, how do I manage the crowd, right? And it just becomes another weight or load. And there's something that we talk about in our workshops called the movement modification methodology, or M3. It's a mouthful. And the first part of that is we want to make sure that we are moving accurately, right? Can I move accurately with my body? Then we want to think about range of motion, and then we want to think about adding a load. Accuracy, range of motion, and load. And then number four is changing the condition. After I've knocked out the first three, I know you can squat. I know you have good range of motion with your squat. I know you can squat holding a dumbbell. Now let's see if you can squat holding a wide bell or a power bag or a something, right? Can we change the load from the front to the back? And that's where those other pieces of equipment come in. And I don't think everyone's thinking about that. Coming back to the foundational movements, can I just change the load that's in someone's hand to change the experience? And you absolutely can.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks, Miguel. Is that a sense of trying to keep it simple as well from a virtual perspective because of the limited amount of equipment for the participant at home? They may only have a strap, for example, or they may only have one kettlebell or one set of wire bells. Is it trying to simplify it for those audiences as well, but still get the energy that if they were there at the TRX Training Center as an example?
Absolutely. When you move to virtual, people are lucky to have any equipment, right? And I mean, in the beginning, that was a big challenge for me, because I've spent the last 13 plus years trying to get people to move to understand how to use a suspension trainer. Body weight exercise was in addition to that, but it was mainly how do I master the suspension trainer and get people to use that really well? So then when it turned to virtual and coming up with body weight exercises, I'm like, okay, let's figure that out, right? And there's a handful that you can do. And then you want to start to program some more stuff in there. You're, okay, who has what, right? And you go back to 2020, people had jugs of water and this and that. And again, it turns into keep it as simple as you can. And again, I'm going to say, don't make it about the equipment, make it about the experience. Because if the time that you have with these folks virtually, and I'm going to take a step back on my response, the time that you have with these folks virtually is more about building this community, and the workout's almost secondary, right? People are coming to you because they care about what you're giving them and they care about the other people in that community. And whatever tools they have, are it is what it is. But chances are, in my situation, they're coming to me because there is a TRX bond. They have a strap. And if you have a strap, that's all that you need. And if you don't have a strap, we'll figure it out. If we have an additional load, we'll work that into it somehow. But that's not going to make or break the workout at the end of the day. You know, we're really happy that you're here and we're going to have a good time doing it.
How do you go about creating a sense of community and accountability then for online classes for someone that's brand new to TRX as a community? You mentioned the participants that are part of the TRX community, to speak. If someone new was to come in, how do you give them a sense of community as well as accountability for what they're trying to do from an online perspective?
It's the same way that you would do it in person, right? If I'm on the TRX training club, right, and I've got my list of names that are showing up into the workouts, I want to personally shout those people out, but then figure out a way how I can follow up with them on social media, right? The list isn't that big of people that are coming in my classes. You screenshot the names, you hit them up. I'm real big on, hey, thank you for coming to my class. If you have any questions, let's chat a little bit. Let's get on social media. Let's trade some messages here and there. Now they have this sense of, oh, I wasn't just another name on the screen. I wasn't just another square on the box. This person cares about my success and my accountability in coming back to this, right? And so what's the communication that I can put out to the people that are making the investment in themselves and in me? And I want to do the best that I can to show them that I appreciate them showing up, but I also, I value their success because their success is my success.
We're a couple of weeks away as a recording from the TRX Training Summit in Athens. It's taking place on February the 24th and 25th. From your perspective, how does it stand out as a unique fitness event?
Well, I mean, it's going to be huge, man. I mean, we are so excited about all these people showing up to the summit. And when you think of international, you straight out the gate, I love how big fitness is internationally and how people show up and the energy that they bring. And the biggest, most exciting part about this is that fitness has no language. Like, fitness is international. And for me to show up as the American that doesn't speak any other languages, then I have to show up and present in front of all of these different people and languages and energies. And it's just something that you dream about, right? And I'm just excited about being able to share the stage with someone of Vanessa, who is also an international presenter and speaks multiple languages and is also a badass. And just leveling up to that expectation, right? And now I know that we're our biggest critics and things like that, but I'm there to have a good time, right?
Absolutely.
We have some great content. We have a great following of the brand. And when we show up to these summits, it's about bringing that great energy that we're working on here in the US and just bringing that to the folks around the world. And yeah, it's hard to explain, but it's just, my cup is overflowing with excitement for Athens.
Brilliant. And can you give us any snippets of what sessions you're going to be delivering, presentations, etc.?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be delivering bandit session, strength band session with Fraser Balch. Again, standing side by side along Fraser, being able to present with him is exciting. And then Vanessa and I will be delivering a workout. We're going to deliver a Y-Bell and TRX experience. I mean, her with her Y-Bell and her Y-Bell coaching and just her ability to be on stage and present, and me with the suspension trainer, I'm really excited about working with her because, I mean, who wouldn't want to, right?
Yeah.
And the big thing for me is every time I present alongside someone, I learn so much from them, and I take all that stuff, I put it in my back pocket for the next time I get out there to present. I show up to these, and believe it or not, I learn more from the people that are there than I actually deliver from the content that I'm putting out there.
Yeah, I think that's true. A lot of the presenters that we've had on the summits over the years, they've always said, yes, not only is their cup full, they learn much as well. Because I think that's a testament to all the attendees that we've ever had at the summit. We always say that we need to bring the energy, but all the attendees, I say 100% of all the attendees, they always bring the energy, and it just lifts us up to deliver the experience that they're after. I think it's a partnership in that regard. We learn from them, they learn from us. They bring the energy, we bring the energy. And because we're expecting close to 600 people in Athens, that's why we're confident it will be the biggest one ever. Yeah, credit to where it's due. I think we've got some world-class presenters, including yourself, Miguel. I think it's going to be one of the best summits ever made, which is great for us and great for TRX as a whole.
It's going to be a big one. That number is special. And just being able to show up and feel the energy of that many people, I don't think many people will understand what that feels like unless you've gone to a sporting event where there's hundreds of, you know, hundreds and thousands of people that are at something like that. But for us, I call us little old TRX, to be able to show up and be the heart pumping energy for this event for the Ultra Life group and everyone else that's going to be there is going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to that. For the listeners that are coming, we're looking forward to seeing you there. For those of you that are interested, I'll make sure I put a link to the registration page on the show notes. Be sure to check that out. Miguel, really appreciate your time. Thanks for your insights into group training, virtual training. I'm sure the listeners are going to really, really appreciate that. For those of you that want to know more about yourself, where to follow, where are you most active on social media? Give us your tags. And again, I'll make sure to put that in the show notes at the end as well.
Right on. You can find me on, if you're going to find me, Miguel TRX SF. That's the one that I use for Instagram and Facebook. I'm not a very good TikToker, but those are the two that you'll mainly find me on. And yeah, reach out, questions, comments. I'd love to chat and learn and get to know you.
I look forward to catching up with you face to face in Athens in a couple of weeks.
All right, man. I can't wait to see you out there. This will be what our we've done Dubai, we've done UK. This will be our third international summit.
Yeah. Well, I've done LA, which is international for me as well. Okay. Yeah, we're getting
number
there, aren't
four.
We? Yeah, mate. It's always a pleasure. I mean, love traveling around the world. Anyway, it's one of the highlights of the role that I'm fortunate to have. But to get to spend time with you again and the rest of the team is always a great highlight of the year. Honestly, looking forward to that week ahead in Athens for sure.
All right, my man. Well, I appreciate everything on here. Everybody who's listening from wherever you are, stay fit, y'all. And I can't wait to see you at the next one.
Cheers, mate. Thanks a lot. As we wrap up this episode of the Road to Athens series, I want to extend a huge thank you to our special guest, Miguel, for sharing his expertise with us today. Always a pleasure to catch up with you, mate. Miguel's insights into crafting effective group workouts, exploring online training innovations, and providing a sneak peek of the upcoming TRX Training Summit in Athens have been truly invaluable. And of course, a big shout out to our sponsors of this series, Ultra Life, for their continued support. Remember, you can catch all of our episodes on your favorite podcast platforms. Don't forget to subscribe, leave me a nice review if you like, and share with your fellow fitness enthusiasts. Until next time, stay motivated, stay inspired, and keep pushing towards your fitness goals. This is Nathan DiRosario signing off. See you on the next episode of the TRX Procast Road to Athens series.